Ladies and gentlemen, dames en heren, welkom hier in deze zaal. Welcome again. Now, live on stage, Mr. Timothy van Herbergen. Please, Timothy, the floor is yours.
Okay, welcome everybody. I'm going to do a small 30-minute session about how we build asteroids with the XNA framework. First of all, I'm going to start off with a small question to the audience. Are there already people that already know XNA and what it is about and already have some basic knowledge about it? Could they please raise their hands? Okay, so quite some people already know XNA. So I'm going to go quickly over my slides because I don't have too much time. So what is XNA? Well, XNA is a free tool set that you can download. And you can use it to build games for different platforms like Windows, Xbox 360, or Zune. And you're using C# and the .NET framework to build these games. And there is already a large community around it, which is called XNA Creators Club. And there's also Xbox Live Indie Games, which you can use to actually publish your own games. So what's new to XNA 3.1? Well, we have avatar support, we have Xbox Live Party support now available, there is video playback now in XNA, and there is a new audio API which allows us to use MP3s and things like that. So what's new to XNA Game Studio 4.0? Well, it's already available, so if you download the Windows Phone Developer Tool CTP, XNA 4.0 will be included, and you can already start testing with that because it will allow you to create applications or games for the Windows Mobile 7 platform. And it integrates with Visual Studio 2010. And we got two profiles here, which makes it easier to target a specific platform. If you want the lower-end platform like DirectX 9 cards, you will be using the Reach profile. And if you want to go to DirectX 10-enabled PCs or Xbox 360, you'll be using the high def profile. So I'm going to start off with my demo. We don't have a lot of time, so I made quite a lot of snippets because I won't be really doing actually live coding because 30 minutes is kind of short. So first of all, when we create an XNA game, we get our main game class in XNA, and our main game class has quite some important functions, methods here called the initialize and load content, which are called the first time of the game. And we use that for loading and initializing all of our data that we'll be using during the game. And then after that, we have an update and a draw call, which will be called constantly. And the update will be used to update all of our game logic, and the draw call will be used to draw frames to the screen so that the user gets to see the game. So first of all, when we run this, we won't be seeing anything. We'll just see some crap on the screen from the graphics device because we're not drawing anything to the screen. So first of all, because we're making a space game, we'll just clear our graphics device and we'll just use the color black, which is quite simple. So if we run our game now, we'll just get a black screen. So, space. So, first of all, I'm going to start with a base object that I created for my game, which is the space object. And this object I will be using for everything in my game, because every object in an asteroids game has the same behavior. When it comes to the side of the screen and it goes over the border, then it will just go back to the other side. And every object has a force which makes it move in a certain direction, and that's about it. So the game will be a 2D game. So first of all, we'll have these variables here, like a vector2, which will hold the position of our object. We'll have a force, which will be applied constantly so that our object will be moving. We'll have an origin, which will be used for the rotation. So that's actually the point on the screen where the texture that we're using for this object will be rotated with. And then we have a rotation that we're holding for the object. We'll have a scale, a collision radius that we'll use for checking the collisions, because when we're doing a 2D game, the circular collisions are quite easy to do. We'll just need a collision radius, and that's about it. then we'll have a lifetime that we'll be using in the managers that will be using these space objects and is alive so that we can check, okay, this object, we don't need it anymore, so that some kind of manager can delete it afterwards. Then because of the fact that our object needs to go to the other side of the screen, when it goes over the border, that we need the space bounds. So actually these space bounds are actually just the size of our window. And then we have a string with the path through the texture that we'll be using, and then the real texture data that will be used to draw everything to the screen. So first of all, I just expose all of these properties. And the only thing I have to mention here is that the rotation will be clamping it between minus pi and just positive pi, so that our rotation just will be just one circle, so that we won't get like really big rotations because it will just be the same. So then in our constructor, we'll just set all the variables. We'll just ask for a position where we want to put the space. Put the space object when we create it. We'll just ask for the path to the texture that we'll be using, and then we'll just give the window bounds so that the object knows when it needs to be drawn to the other side of the screen. So we're setting the position. We're just setting the force to zero, the origin. We can't calculate the origin yet because we actually want to rotate always with the center of our texture, but we haven't loaded our texture yet, so we don't know the size, so we're just setting that to zero right now. And then we just set the space bounds and we set it to alive, okay. And then during the load content, we'll be using this to load the actual texture. We'll be loading the texture with a content manager, which is a class in XNA that is used to load all of your assets. And you can just say, okay, I want to load a texture 2D, and you just give a path and it will return the real texture 2D that can be used for drawing to the screen. We'll calculate the origin now because we know the texture width and the texture height. So we'll just divide that by two so we have the center. And then we'll have a collision radius. We'll just take the half of the size of the texture so that we'll have a circle just inside of the texture. So during the update, which will be called constantly for our space object, we'll just update our position with the force that is currently applied to our space object. And then here we'll just actually move the space object to the other side of the screen when it crosses the other side of the screen. So when it goes to the right and it crosses the right side of the screen, we'll just move it back to the left side of the screen. And I'm just using the collision radius here as an offset so that it doesn't really flip directly. It looks just a little bit better. So it goes a little bit outside of the screen and then it comes back into the other side. So during the draw call, we'll actually be drawing the texture that we are using here for this space object, and we're just using the texture here. We're just saying, okay, what position we want to draw it on the screen. This is actually a rectangle, but we're not using this. This is something if you want to draw a specific part only of the texture. This is also a color that you could blend with, but we're not using that either. So we're just taking white. And then we'll have the rotation and the origin, so the point at which around which we'll rotate, and then the amount of rotation, and then the scale, and some effects that we can apply, but we're not really using that. So normally for a sprite batch, you would call begin and end. So this tells the graphics device that it's ready to draw 2D stuff to the screen. But I'm not doing that here in a space object because I want to draw multiple stuff at once so that I don't have to set the graphics device constantly, because this would take some hit on the performance of the game. So we'll be doing that somewhere else. So and then we'll have a collision detection, which is pretty simple because we're using circular collisions. So what we'll do is we'll just check if we'll just get the distance of these of two objects, and then if this distance is smaller than the radius combined of the two objects that we're checking, then we actually have a collision. So and if it's bigger, then there's no collision. So it's quite easy with circles. So then we have our final space object. And we'll be using this space object in some game components that I'll be using. So these game components are components that you can use in XNA, and if you add them to an XNA game, the XNA framework will automatically be calling the update and the draw, and all of the initialize and load content will be calling that automatically for you, so you don't have to handle it yourself, which makes it really easy to do component-based development. So first of all, we'll have a player class, which represents our player of the game. First of all, what we'll have here for this player is that we'll have a spaceship, and this will be a space object that we just created. And then we'll also need a keyboard state and a previous keyboard state, because we want to check the input of the player and we want to modify some kind of things when the player presses a certain key. And then I also have a bullet manager. And this bullet manager will be a game component also, but it won't be a drawable game component. Actually, the player is a drawable game component, and the player will handle the drawing of the spaceship and all of its bullets together so that it will be optimized that way. The only thing that we do here is we expose the spaceship, and then we'll have the constructor for the player. And what we'll do here is... we'll just set the player's position to the middle of the screen. So we'll start in the middle of the screen. And then we'll create this spaceship space object. And we'll just say, OK, use the spaceship texture. Those are textures that are in our content folder right here. So they're just simple bitmaps that we're using. We just set the position to the middle of the screen. And we just give the client bounds of the window so that the space object knows when to draw it to the other side of the screen. And then we create the new bullet manager, and we add the game component of the bullet manager automatically when we create a player. So then during the load content of this player, we'll create a sprite batch, which we'll be using to draw everything to the screen. And then we'll also load the content of our space object that we just created so that the texture gets loaded so that we can... draw the final texture to the screen using the sprite batch. And then during the update of our player, in the beginning of our update, we'll just, this will be called constantly, so during the beginning of our update, we'll just get the current keyboard state, and at the end, we'll just set the previous keyboard state to the current keyboard state so that we know what the keyboard state was in the last when the last update was called. And then we'll just check if the key is up, then we want to apply a force to our ship. So what we'll do is we'll have a forward force, and then we'll rotate this force using a matrix in the direction of the spaceship. So we'll be using the spaceship's rotation to rotate this force vector. And then we'll add this force finally when we transformed it in the right direction. We'll add this force to the spaceship. And when the key is right or left, then we'll just add some rotation to the ship, which is quite simple. And then we'll be using the previous keyboard state and the current keyboard state, because when we press space, we don't want the user to be firing all the time when space is down. So we'll just want that user will only be able to fire once every time he presses the button. So we'll just check if the button, if the key is down for space and previously it was up, then we just press once. So then we'll create a force for a bullet that we are going to fire. We'll also rotate this, just like with the ship's force, we'll rotate this force in the direction that our ship is rotated. And then we'll use this force and the position of the ship to tell the bullet manager to fire a bullet into space. This small piece of code is actually just to limit our speed with a maximum of 10, so we don't want our ship to go faster than a certain amount. And then we'll actually add some friction here, just that if we're not pressing forward anymore and we're not adding force, our ship will slowly slow down, actually. So then we'll call the update for our space object, and then we'll just set the previous keyboard state to the current. So then we want to draw everything to the screen. So when we are drawing something to the screen, we'll call the sprite batch begin. So this will tell the graphics device that it needs to be set for drawing 2D stuff to the screen. So and then we'll just iterate over all our bullets, which are just space objects, and we'll just draw them all. And then also our spaceship will be drawn. using that sprite batch, and then after that we'll just call the sprite batch.end so that the graphics device knows that we're ending we've finished a 2D drawing. So, and then we have a small function here called destroyed, which is actually used for when our ship hits an asteroid. We'll just keep it really simple here, not a lot of logic. We'll just put the spaceship back to the middle of the screen, and we'll just remove all of the force that was on this spaceship. So the only thing we need to do now is add a bullet manager so that we can fire stuff from our spaceship. And then we can start testing if our spaceship is already working. So this is quite simple. So we'll just have a list of space objects which will represent our bullets. And we'll expose this list. And then during our constructor, we'll just make this new list. All right. And then during our update, we'll just iterate over all the bullets in our list. We'll update the space objects, so we'll update our bullets. And then we'll be using this lifetime property. We'll add the lifetime in milliseconds to our bullets, and we'll just say, okay, if our bullets are older than one second, then we'll just tell them that they are not alive anymore so that our bullets won't be in our game constantly, so they will die after 1 second. And then we'll just remove all of the bullets that are dead. So then we'll have the fire bullet function, which we'll be using in the player class when we want to fire a bullet. And this fire bullet function just tells our, we'll just create a space object here which will represent a bullet, and we'll be using the bullet texture here. We use the position that we get from the player, and we also set the client bounds for the space object so that it knows when to draw it to the other side of the screen. And then we'll add the force that we get from the player to the bullet, and we'll just add it to the list. So now we can actually already test this. So if we go back to our main game class and we go to the initialize, we can create a new player. All right, and then we just add this component to our components of the main game class. All right, and when we run the game now, then we'll have our basic spaceship. It will be moving. We can shoot bullets, and these bullets will die when they're older than 1 second. So that's the only thing we need now is actually our main asteroid field, which will be spawning asteroids all the time. Okay. So now we have our asteroid field, which will also be a drawable game component. So when we will also just be able to add this to the main game class. And in this game component, we'll just be spawning asteroids all the time, and there won't be a lot of logic in this thing. We'll just randomly be spawning asteroids, and it'll come from the side of the screen towards the player, and then we will check for collisions between the bullets and the players, and so on. So it's also a drawable game component. It would be even more optimized if we would have like one drawing manager or some kind of thing like that that would draw all of the sprites at once, but I wanted to show already how the player was working so that I made that a different drawable game component. But performance-wise, it would be better to just draw everything at once. So for this asteroid field, we'll just have a list of players. I'm making a list of players here because maybe we want to make a multiplayer game sometime. And then we would change the player a little bit so that we can check, okay, which controller we want to use. But then you would easily be able to add new players to the game, and you could easily make a multiplayer game in actually no time. So that's why I'm using a list here. And then we'll also have a list of space objects, which will just represent our asteroids that we have in the game. Then I have this spawn timer, which will actually be used just to check that every few seconds we'll be adding new asteroids to the game. So that's why we're using this integer for a spawn timer. And then we'll also have a sprite badge that will be used to draw all of the asteroids to the screen here. And then a random function, which will be used to calculate random positions on the screen so that our asteroids are always coming from a different position on the screen. So during this constructor, we'll be creating a new list of players. And we'll also create a new list of asteroids. So these are space objects. And then we'll put the spawn timer to zero. So, okay. Then during our load content, we'll be creating a new sprite badge. The good thing about these game components is that we constantly have access to the game itself. So, because actually you get the game here in the constructor, so you have access to the graphics device and the content the main content manager of the game and things like that. So, which makes it easy in your game that you don't have to pass all these references yourself. If you would not be using game components, you would have to do this yourself. So, when you're using game components, it's really easy because you have access to almost everything in the game. So that's actually one of the advantages of using game components. And also one of the advantages is that if you want to share this with a friend or something and you made a quite basic game component that could be used in other games too, you could easily share just this game component and just your friend could add it to his own game class, and normally most of the time this would work quite easily. So we'll have an add player function here because we'll just add a player to our players list. So what we'll do here is we'll just add this player that we get. All right. And then we'll have a spawn asteroids function. And this spawn asteroid function, what we're doing here is actually we're creating a random position outside of the screen. So it will always be to the left side or to the upper side of the screen. So, but because we're also making a random force, it might happen that our asteroid will go to that direction or go to that direction. And because it will be on top of the screen, it might also actually happen that it just spawns at the bottom of the screen because the force is in that direction. So that's how we create our random function here. For people that don't have experience with the 2D screens positions in XNA, well, actually 0.0 is actually your upper left corner. So, and going down makes it go positive, and going right is also positive. So if you go negative, then you will be outside towards the left of the screen if you're on the x-axis. And on the y-axis, negative will be on top of your, actually above your screen. So we'll calculate this random position, and we'll also calculate a random speed. And then we'll just have a force in a random direction. We'll limit this force with the speed that we want. And then we'll be creating a new space object which will represent our asteroid. And we're using the asteroid one texture here. And just like in all of the other space objects, we'll be giving our Klein bounds. And then we add the force to our asteroid so that it will be moving. And then we load the content so that the texture is loaded and it can be drawn to the screen when we are in our draw call. So during this update, what we'll do here is we'll update our spawn timer and using milliseconds. And then every second we'll be spawning a new asteroid. And if our asteroids count is smaller than 5, then we'll spawn a new asteroid. Otherwise, we just already have five. We have already enough asteroids in our game. And then we won't be spawning new asteroids. So when we spawn a new asteroid, we'll put our spawn timer on zero again, and we'll just call the spawn asteroid function. And then what we'll do here, we'll be checking for collisions. These collisions, we'll be using the hit function that we created in our space object. And we'll just go through all of the asteroids, and then we'll update these asteroids, and then we'll go through all of the players that we have, and we'll just check if this asteroid hits the current player. And if it hits the current player, we'll just tell the player that it's destroyed. And then if it's destroyed, we want to reset all of the asteroids, so we'll not be using the same asteroids that we created here. So this is a Boolean I'm using here, just to make sure that we'll be resetting afterwards. And then after that, we'll also check if a bullet is hitting our asteroids. And what we do here is we just go through all of the bullets for every player, and we'll check it if there is a hit between an asteroid and a bullet. And if that's the case, then we'll just put the bullet and the asteroid so that they're not alive anymore, so that we know that we can delete them. And the bullet manager will automatically remove those bullets from the collection. And here we'll be able to reset the asteroids. So this means our player has hit an asteroid, so we'll be clearing all of the asteroids. And then otherwise, if the player didn't hit an asteroid, we'll just be removing all the asteroids that aren't alive anymore, so that we know, okay, these asteroids were hit by a bullet, so the player destroyed them, so we need to delete them. So then finally, during our draw call, it's kind of the same with our player. We'll just call the sprite badge begin so that the graphics device knows, okay, we're drawing something to the screen. We'll be drawing 2D stuff to the screen, I mean. And then we'll just iterate over all of the asteroids, which are space objects, and we'll just call the draw and give the sprite badge with it. And then at the end, we'll just call the sprite badge.end so that the graphics device knows that it's done drawing 2D things. So now we have our asteroid field ready. And then we can create this new asteroid field, which is actually also just a game component. All right. So we create it just in the same way as we created the player. And then, of course, our asteroid field needs to know the player. So what we'll do is we'll call this addPlayer function that we created, and we'll add this player that we created also to the asteroid field so that our asteroid field can interact with the player. And then we'll add this asteroid field component also to the components of the game class. So, and if we would run the game right now, then we would have an asteroid field, and we'll have our basic asteroids game. You could extend this with like something that writes the interface. We can shoot. We can destroy all of the asteroids, and new asteroids will be spawned when they get destroyed. And then if we hit, we'll just reset the game. But you could make a lot of more logic behind this. So this is really basic, because I didn't have a lot of time to do this session, because half an hour is kind of short. But if you would have more time, you could make like an interface, update the score of the player every time he hits an asteroid, create even a multiplayer game, because we could easily add multiple players right now. Just the only thing we need to do is change the input so that we know which controller every player is using and stuff like that. So okay, that's the end of my session. Thank you for listening.